Hello, neighbours. Welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. This is episode 12 of season 2. Here's a nice debate starter question for you. Who were the first Europeans to farm what is now known as Newfoundland Labrador, or at least attempt to farm it? Yep, it was the Vikings. More specifically, the Icelandic Vikings. If we read the Norse saga about the voyages of Leif, the son of Eric the Red, and Leif's brother Torvald, and others, when they explored Vinland, they brought, and I quote here, all kinds of livestock, because it was their intention to settle the country if they could. End of quote. That is, if the sagas can be believed. And of course they can, I add quickly, just to avoid the thunder and lightning that can come from such unbelieving. The Viking explorers were farmers, and they took along what they needed to survive. They packed their lunch, if you will. So that's my short answer to why I'm intrigued by the comparisons between Icelandic agriculture and its cousin in Newfoundland and Labrador.
Most of the Icelandic people think very highly of Icelandic agriculture. When you get a pandemic like that, people start to think about food security, food safety. We like to travel and we stayed at home and we put up our barbecue, and so that was good for the agriculture. Cattle here, the horses and the sheep are Icelandic and have been here for 1,000 years, and we want to protect them. We have very few diseases. The interest to knit and to do something has always been here, and we have this tradition.
Today's guest directs an agricultural advisory service in Iceland, kind of like an updated model of the extension services that used to exist in parts of this province and well beyond. I've met him a number of times at agricultural conferences and always enjoyed hearing his perspectives. Indeed, a few years back, he was persuaded, rather easily actually, to come to Cornerbrook for one such conference. We met up again in late winter of this year, but this time on Zoom. We started out with an update on how COVID-19 affected agriculture in Iceland.
I'm working at the Icelandic Agricultural Advisory Center, the only advisory center in Iceland. So the people who are working in the center is stationed throughout the country. We are around 50 people. My name is Karvel Lindberg Karvelsson.
You're located at the Agriculture University of Iceland?
We are in that region, in Kvaneri. It's southwest of Iceland.
What's the pandemic been like for farmers in Iceland?
You want the long version or the short version?
Give me the long one and I can always cut it up.
Of course, in the beginning, when it started, it was panic like everywhere else. People in Iceland, of course, have worries about food security, how to get toilet paper also like everyone else. And of course, now the agriculture relies on imported barley, wheat, oils, things like that. So at the beginning, we started to look around. Do we have enough? Will there be some situation that we can maybe not feed poultry or pigs or something like that? That's what's one of our worries at the beginning. Of course, the tourists stopped to come. We had before around 2 million coming through the year, but this year it's around 500,000, and 250,000 of them came in January and February. So when we get into the summer, the agriculture had worries about, because of course when you have population that has around 260,000 and you have 2 million tourists, then that would affect the agriculture, of course. So the main things in the start, we had worries about, can we be self-sufficient? And we tried to figure that out. Then that was worries about, will the farmers get sick? And we had to have a plan about how to keep them in nearly in guarantee. And when you go to a store or something like that, that you keep safe and have people that can go in and help the farmers. That was our main concern. But then the COVID began to go down in the summer, and we were really lucky. We got really nice summer. So the agriculture was lucky, if you think about that. Icelandic people started to travel in Iceland and, of course, stayed in Iceland. They were not moving abroad. So we like to travel and we stayed at home and we put up our barbecue, and so that was good for the agriculture. Mm-hmm. During that time, we didn't have any farmers, or at least or very few, that had COVID. So there was no problem there. Then during the autumn, COVID was going up again, and we worried about the slaughterhouses, especially the slaughterhouses for sheep, because we gathered them down from the mountains in September, August, September, and then we start to slaughter, and just a short period, and we bring people in, and we have to have people in to gather them off the mountain, and we had really strong restrictions then, so that was a problem, and we worried about what if the people get sick there. But luckily, it was all right. Of course, we are selling less meat. If you look at the agriculture market in Iceland, there's some that has been increasing during the last year's import of meat and agriculture products, and has been increasing and was at the highest in 2019. So we had pressure from outside that it was easy for the supermarket to buy cheap meat. So the prices for the farmers have been pretty low.
For all kinds of meat or just for cheap meat?
Basically for all kinds of meats. But of course, the import was not as much in 2020. And but if you take out 2 million people, then of course you don't need as much.
What about those farms that do agritourism? How did they do this year?
Yeah, it's like you just turn off the lights. There's no one there. Mm. So for many of them, that has maybe diverged into tourists, maybe have few sheep and a little bit of horses and put a lot of money in that, and have been luckily last year's good market, but now this year it was nearly nothing. So they had problem, but the government came in with some money, but it's a concern. But many of them are also with, you know, long tradition of farming and don't have a lot of debts. But anyway, it still is hard.
You mentioned that there's 2 million fewer people to feed because the tourists aren't there. Were there any shortages for some things that are mostly imported?
Yeah, it was funny. At the beginning, the manager of the biggest supermarket that has been importing meat and agriculture products and been a little bit of war to getting more and more in inside. But he said that we were lucky to have good agriculture and it was important for us to have stocked up meat. So no, basically, there was no shortage.
Was it a couple of years ago there were some changes in terms of importing meat? It had to be frozen and now you import fresh meat?
For many years, it was not allowed to import anything than frozen meat. But now the regulation has changed and you are allowed to import fresh meat. The main impact was changes in the toll market that they opened for EU. Why did we only had frozen meat inside? We have, of course, the cattle here, the horses and the sheep are Icelandic and have been here for 1,000 years, mm-hmm. and we want to protect them. We have very few diseases, and that was why we didn't want to get inside fresh meat. But people argued about that. They say that you cannot get at risk with tourism and otherwise. Anyway,
I'm sure you're watching that closely, though. If there's any pathogens that come in or any diseases, animal diseases.
Yeah, we are watching closely. The main concern was things like Salmonella, Campylobacter. Salmonella and Campylobacter, for example, in poultry and pigs are much lower here than average in Europe, similar to Norway, maybe Sweden. So people getting sick in Iceland because of meat is very rare. You want to protect that?
I would assume that the regulations around, like, say, a pig farm or a chicken farm in Iceland might be different than one in Spain or Poland or whatever. Is that one of the challenges for farmers in Iceland?
As you know, Ivan, they should be the same or similar. But if you look at the statistics, for example, many diseases in Europe now in pigs, that is going around, so that we don't have. So that's the main worries that we'll get something inside. Yeah. Yes, we have hard regulations here, but are they harder than in Spain and Poland? I suspect that, yeah.
Do you have a suggestion for a piece of music that I can use? Something, a nice Icelandic piece of music?
Yeah, of course, of course. Okay, then we can take something like Papar, P-A-P-A-R. And if you find something good with them, it's Icelandic lyrics with Irish songs.
Sort of like a Celtic Nordic mix.
Yeah.
Papar. I've never heard of them. This is great.
And you can try that. You probably know the songs, but they are in Icelandic, so... Brúðkaupsvistan var, villan kom svo Dómhildar Og að söng við urðum þar, eldrið öll í framan Hvergi var svo fjölmenn tvir, fullt var húsið út í dyr Vinir allt sem óvinnir, allir glöddust saman Herre brúðkaupsvistan var, villan kom svo Dómhildar Og að söng við urðum þar, eldrið öll í framan Hausið var sem ólgu sjó, öl og víni mér
kokkir ráðu saman Herli brúðkaups veistlan var Villa Koks og Dómilda Og að söng við urðum þar Eldrið öll í framan Lengi nætur sveitt og sæ Sveiflu polka vals og ræl Upp með tá og upp með hæl Öll við stigum saman Herli brúðkaups veistlan var Villa Koks og Dómilda Og að söng við urðum þar Eldrið öll í framan
By suggestion of today's guest, Carvel Carvelson, that's the Icelandic Celtic folk band Papar with Brúðkaup Villa Koksal. Though I know it as Mary's Wedding. Different language, same lively spirit. We start off this second section of our chat talking about how a crisis like COVID can affect people's thoughts about food. Carvel starts by referring to the collapse of the Icelandic banks in 2008.
When we had the crisis, bank crisis in 2008, people started knitting and, go back to the old ways. And it was a similar situation here. They talk about we have to have really a strong agriculture and we should grow more of our vegetables and actually the government has come in with some money to that and there have been some positive effects but we forget hopefully not most of the Icelandic people are positive and thinks very highly of Icelandic agriculture when you get pandemic like that people start to think about food security food safety of course there are more portals now like climate exchange diseases in animals so maybe things are turning around people start to think more about their area where do you live how do you use the land and which kind of meat will you eat of course you have heard about the discussion about the meat is really dangerous to the climate so maybe you start to choose more carefully what you are eating and so if that would be the case I think the Icelandic agriculture has a positive future
as you know in Nifnay-Labrador there's been an attempt to increase production as well, and government has put some money toward that. It's a complicated process. Who do you cut the checks to, or what do you support? Do you have advice on how governments can do that?
Yeah, where do you put money? I'm a manager of an advisory center. It's always good to put money in an advisory.
advisory center.
if someone is listening. but of course, innovation, help new farmers to use the land, maybe in a different way. The biggest owner of land in Iceland is the farmers, of course, and mostly of them are sheep farmers and using the land for the sheep. But as you know, we can use land maybe better in another way. And basically, the money should go directly to these funds that are specially made for innovation, directly to the farmers. And we have been talking here about maybe directly to the farmers to buy any new investments. Because when you start, what do you need? You need advising and you need some technical stuff. And that's the best way for the money, I think.
Is it hard for a young farmer, an entrepreneur, even if they have an idea? Is land available? Is financing available?
Yeah, the financing is the one way. Of course, the government is supporting farmers here, as in most of the countries. And we have to find a way how you support directly through the products or are it on land or how do you do it? And one of the projects that we are looking at now is agriculture that maybe has a different way of seeing things that you can be both growing something, maybe be a more keeper of land, help the land to be sufficient. That's a part of it.
One of the things that happened here is a lot of people decided to have their own garden this past year. Was that something that happened there as well?
Even though it's a big country with few people, people rely on the agriculture here and have some trust on it. So I'm not sure about that people are starting to grow things themselves. Of course, there's more interest. People want to go into producing vegetables. So that's something that we have to look into and help for people to do. If maybe you could see that. People are interested in buying land and to do something with it. It's a demand of land. So that may be a part of it. But you can also see that maybe way of thinking. People are at home more. Now, if you want to own a dog, you cannot find him. Everyone wants to own a dog. So to grow their own potatoes or something like that in the garden. Yeah, maybe it has been an increase in that. I have no numbers on it. So
yeah. One of the ways we measure it here is that seeds ran out like in May. And then in the fall, we couldn't buy canning jars or bottling jars.
Yeah, when you say it, there are some shortages of seed in the spring here. That was also that we import seed, so people abroad, they want to buy seed also, so that was mainly the reason, maybe.
Do you have certain potatoes or cabbage or kale or whatever that's Icelandic? Like, you have Icelandic animals. Do you have Icelandic plants that then you have seeds that are saved year after year that are adapted to that climate?
Yeah, we have. Yeah. We have that. But that's a small part of the seeds that we need. But that's one of the things that we had to look into.
You've been to Newfoundland, Labrador. Mm-hmm. You know a bit about Newfoundland, Labrador agriculture, or you've been told some things and seen some things as well. You know, do you have any reflections on the comparison between the two places and the way agriculture is developed or not developed?
Yeah, the first thing that I saw when I came to Newfoundland was that milk production, that is really, really big here. And we have a lot of products, a lot of cheese, and you are maybe familiar with that. In Newfoundland, as I remember, there were only very few, at least. Two, yeah, okay. Yeah. So that was something that I thought was strange. I think that you can do better there. And also in slaughterhouses, these big slaughterhouses that we had here, we had at least three, four big. You didn't seem to have that. It was like this infrastructure that was lacking. Of course, our infrastructure is not perfect, but I think it's better than you have. So that's the main difference. It's for the farmer to, you know, have 500 sheep and go with them on the market. It's just going through this big slaughterhouse. So he's not really close to the market, but he can just rely on being a farmer and don't have to sell his products on the market as well. The milk producers, we have this one big dairy, and we have another small one, but they are taking all the milk, so the farmers have quite good environment regarding that. But you had what we don't have, but we are trying to get better in that, to be more closer to the market and, you know, have products on the farm, to be allowed to sell some products from the farm. Yeah. Especially when you have this tourism, you can sell something special. And the Icelandic regulation has not been in line with in that. So we can learn something from you regarding that.
I think you hit a couple of the big infrastructure things. People have been talking for pretty much as long as I can remember about secondary processing in the dairy sector, about abattoirs, and cold storage, which be the other thing of infrastructure for the root crops. Sort of related to that, the seasonality of sheep, where there's one breeding season. Are there Icelandic sheep farmers who are trying to change that, because the market sometimes can get glutted when there's so much lamb on the market at that time? Is that taking place?
No, not yet, at least. We have just one mating season, but it has been some experience with that. And now we have got some money from a fund, our advisory center, to look into it. Is it something that would be a good for the market? Is it something that the farmers should benefit from? So we will be looking into it now for this project will go on for this year. So maybe we have some results next year if it's something that it's profitable or because we rely on grazing during the summer. And of course, that's cheap. But if you have to keep the lambs inside and feed them, you have to get more money for them. And we have tradition for frozen lamb meat in Iceland. So will the market respond to fresh meat during the winter? We don't know.
What's happened sometimes for us is that people try to do import substitution, I guess is the word that we use. So we find there's things that people are eating, and then we try to figure out if we can produce them. And sometimes we can, sometimes it isn't worthwhile. Are there some things that folks are looking at in Iceland in terms of replacing the imports that are coming in?
Yeah, there are, especially in the vegetables. We have some possibilities there. A lot of things that we can grow. Of course, we have hot water and cheap energy, and we are keeping the lights on during the winter. So the possibilities are there, but we have to compete with some quality products, because we cannot compete with something that is cheap. But there has been changing through the years. For example, in tomatoes, now we have a lot of kinds of tomatoes. Yeah, there are many other products that we are looking into. And there has been talk also about this really big greenhouses that will mainly sell abroad. Just use the clean Icelandic water, the energy, and sell abroad. But maybe through that will be some new products. The farmers are doing a lot of things. And the one of key elements in what we will be looking at next years is there something that we can grow that we haven't been growing. Last year, it has been especially, for example, in vegetables. It's tomatoes, it's paprika, mainly cucumbers. But now they're coming in new things. And people are really interested in trying new things. And that's something that we have to look at and help people with.
Yeah, maybe you could change some of the aluminium plants into big, huge greenhouses.
Yeah, we have one that is has never been started. So,
oh, really? Okay.
Maybe there's opportunity.
One of the things that we have trouble with greenhouses is that in the winter we need light and power is very expensive. So even if we did have geothermal water, which our water down there is not very hot, the problem of the cost of hydroelectricity is a little bit too high. So that would be a key thing we'd have to work on.
Yeah, but you have a really good summer, and maybe short summer, but good one. It's a little bit of lottery here. Sometimes you have summer, sometimes you don't.
Was a tune called High Hopsa Sea by the Icelandic band Papar, as requested by my guest today, Karvel Karvelsson, the managing director of the Icelandic Agricultural Service, although I won't even try pronouncing its name in Icelandic. In this final section, we talk about innovation and wool and matters in between.
There's a tradition, at least this is especially from the fishery. The people in Newfoundland and Labrador know more about Icelandic fishery than agriculture, by and large. But there's this assumption that there's a lot of innovation in Icelandic culture. That's a part of it. The secondary processes, different byproducts of fish. Is that the same kind of innovation happening in agriculture in terms of trying to continually find new things to do with what we used to throw out?
The fish industry has been really remarkable regarding that. So that's something that we can learn of in agriculture. And I think now we are in some agreement with the government, and people start to thinking during the climate change and how to be more self-sufficient, how to use products better. And then if you have these funds to help people to start to come with some new innovations, a couple of years, it will be an adventure. I believe in that. Yeah. And we can learn many things from the fish industry, how they have changed. I've heard numbers of many percents of value that they get more from one fish now than they got for 15 years ago. Many byproducts, products like it's going into medicals and even clothes.
Even clothes. Out of fish byproducts.
Yeah.
One of the byproducts of lamb, of course, of sheep, would be wool. We don't, in Canada in general, but in Newfoundland and Labrador in particular, don't make very good use of it, by and large. There are some people who do. You sort of referred to the crisis in 2008. People started to knit again. For those of us who go there, we have this sense that there's always been all kinds of Icelandic sweaters everywhere and knitting and so on. Has that gone in phases as well?
Yeah, it has gone in phases. And a like you said, during the crisis, it gone really up again, and the price for the wool directly to the farmers was really low, nearly nothing in some periods. But the interest to knit and to do something has always been here, and we have this tradition. It comes and goes in phases. Now it's up again, I think, it seems. Yeah. But of course, we have no tourists to buy them, to buy the sweaters. But anyway, the interest is there, and it's unbelievable how many have really interest in that. And also, you have a tourism around that. People was coming just because of that, and knitting conference and changing recipes like that. So we have big tradition. And of course, as you know, the Icelandic wool is exceptional wool and has been in line with this hard country all these years. So it's really good to be in Icelandic wool sweater. At least it's better than some stuff made of fabric from factory.
For us, the challenge is, how do we get from where we are now to there? And with young people, there's a bit more interest in knitting, but for a period of time it just sort of declined. You couldn't find people who would knit, and farmers are not getting much for their wool. It seems like quite a barrier to get to that point where it becomes, you know, becomes part of our tourism and everything else.
Luckily for us, it was like my grandmother, that generation, they had tradition for knitting because we had to use it. It didn't have any until the Second War. We relied on that clothing, so you had people up to 70, 80, 90 that could knit, had the tradition, and so it really didn't die out. It was always there, but maybe the crisis was good regarding that, because then the more people got interesting, and you have now lots of young people who are interested. It's not enough one or two or three or four or knitting. Yeah. You have to have some tradition, yeah. And the tradition has not died. Never. So that's maybe the reason for it, that it's so big now. And of course, we have a lot of sheep. So we have to get rid of the wool
That's
somehow.
Right.
But they have also starting now to, you know, put it into some clothing that is nearly looks like normal fabric. But it's special kind. Next time you come here, I will show it to you. It's mainly wool, I think. Yeah. I don't remember the English words for it. So.
And I don't remember the Icelandic word for it either.
We are even.
Thanks so much, Carvel. All the best. Thanks.
Yeah, hopefully you get something out of it. Hopefully you understand what I'm trying to say, and I'm using maybe words that are hard to pronounce for me, and so...
That's fine, yeah. Well, hopefully we'll see you again sometime soon.
Hopefully. Yeah. Always welcome in Iceland.
Thank you. And you in Canada, of course.
Thank you.
Take care.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
If you'd like to know more about Karvel Karvelsson or the organization that he works for in Iceland, go to www.rml.is. And unless your Icelandic is working, you can try the translations that can come with your browser. You'll at least be able to see the areas they work in related to research and advice. Later in the season, we'll hear from a couple more folks from Iceland. And if you're oddly intrigued by these Iceland Newfoundland Labrador comparisons, drop me a line. I can send you one of my rambling presentations on the topic. My email's on the Fit to Eat website.
You had what we don't have, but we are trying to get better in that, be closer to the market and be allowed to sell some products from the farm. The biggest owner of land in Iceland is the farmers, and mostly of them are sheep farmers, and using the land for the sheep. But as you know, we can use land maybe better. It was easy for the supermarket to buy cheap meat, so the prices for the farmers have been pretty low. Even though it's a big country with few people, people rely on the agriculture here and have some trust on it.
This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. To listen to other episodes of this show or for more information, go to fittoeatnl.ca. The songs for today's show were Broodkop, Ville Kokso, and Haie Hopsa Sea from the Icelandic band Papar, by request of my guest today, who is, even at this very moment, laughing at my Icelandic pronunciations. The theme music, Cluckold Hen, was performed this week by Harley, Bray, Vivian, and Phil Williams. This is a production of Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Emke. Join me again next time. I'll be right here. Happy trails.
It's a little bit of lottery here. Sometimes you have summer, sometimes you don't.